So, in Parshas Truma, we have and begin our discussion of the Mishkan. And we continue through the discussion of the Mishkan in Parshas Truma, where we discuss the Kelim, Tetzava, where we speak about the Big Day Kahuna. Then we go to Kisisa, where it's less Mishkan-focused and more about the Chayta Egel. And then Vayakob Akude, where we continue on and describe the actual building of the Mishkan. And the question is, What is going on? Why do we have so many parshios dedicated to the Mishkan? What is the purpose of the Mishkan? What was the purpose of the Mishkan? And that is the question one, our central question, which we are going to address. Question two is, where does the command for the Mishkan appear? Right now, we're coming off of Parshas Mishpatim, where at the end of Parshas Mishpatim, we describe Matan Torah. And then in Parshas Kisisa, we're going to have the Chet HaEgel. But if you think about the chronology, mostly we assume that the Chet HaEgel happened at some point in Tammuz, and then Moshe goes up to Har Sinai, and we only get the command about the Mishkan after Yom Kippur, after Bnei Yisrael were forgiven, and then Mishkan is built for a few months, and it's finally the dedication of Mishkan is on the first of Nisan. So why on earth are we going out of order, right? We have Matan Torah, which is in Sivan, then we should really have the Chet HaEgel, and then we should have the description of the Mishkan. Why are we going from the description of Matan Torah to the Mishkan, then going to the Chet HaEgel? So those are our two questions that we're going to be trying to address today. What is the purpose of the Mishkan, and why does the Mishkan appear here before the Chet HaEgel, if chronologically speaking, it should really appear afterwards? So we are going to suggest, normally we suggest three approaches. Today we're going to suggest four approaches. So we're going to start with the opinion of Rashi. So before we get to Rashi, let's just look at the pasuk and our parsha. Va'asu li mikdash, make for me a mikdash, v'shechanti besocham, and I will dwell in their midst. A lot of discussion, is this referring to just the Mishkan? Is this also referring to the base of mikdash? What does it mean, v'shechanti besocham, for Hashem to dwell in a house? So we're not going to be focusing on those questions as much today. Really, we're just going to be focusing on what is the purpose and why does it appear here where it appears. So Rashi, his opinion is in a few different places, but let's start with source number two on page one, Shmos Perek Lamaches Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Eilef Ukudei HaMishkan, Mishkan Heidus. So these are the inventory of the tabernacle. Right, the Mishkan Ha'edus. It's called the Mishkan Ha'edus. Asher Pukad Al Pi Moshe Avodas Halaviyim Biyadi Samar Ben Aaron HaKohen. So this is the beginning of Parshat Pekudei in a few weeks. But what is the Mishkan called? The Mishkan is referred to in two words: is Mishkan Ha'edus, the Mishkan of testimony. So why is it called the Mishkan of testimony? What is it a testimony about? So people want to explain that it's the maybe referring to the Luchos Ha'edus, but what is this term, Mishkan Ha'edus? So Rashi explains in source number three, and here is Rashi's opinion about what the purpose of the Mishkan was. Rashi says, Mishkan Ha'edus, Edus LeYisrael. The Mishkan served as testimony to the Jews. How did it serve testimony? What was it testifying about? Sheviter lahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu al Maisa HaEgel. That Hashem had forgiven them on the Maisa Egel. They sinned with the golden calf, and Hashem, you know, pulled his glory away from them. So from the fact that Hashem chose to re-put his Shechina amongst them, that was an indicator, that was a testimony, that was a testimonial, that was a proof that Hashem now had forgiven them and dwelled amongst them. So what, according to Rashi, what is the purpose of the Mishkan? It is a way of showing and displaying to Bnei Yisrael that Hashem's presence is now amongst them again, and that Hashem has completely forgiven them for the Mishkan. Similarly, if you look in Parshas Shmini, in source number four, Vayavo Moshe Va'aron El Ol Moed, they come to the Ol Moed, Vayetu, then they come out, Vayivarachu Es Ha'am, and they bless the nation, Vayirach Von Hashem El Kol Ha'am. And literally, Hashem's kavod, His presence, His glory, is seen to the entire nation. So Rashi says, on the pasuk over there, Vayetze Vayavarchu Es Ha'am, Amru V'Yinom Hashem Elokeinu Aleinu, that Hashem should, you know, dwell his presence amongst us and should be pleasant. So what is that referring to? Let it be Hashem's will that Hashem will dwell his presence on your handiwork. All 7 days of the miluim where they're working in the Mishkan and trying to do all the processes with the karbanos and initiation process. Shemidu Moshe l'mishkan. Moshe would put it up every single day, Vishimeshbo, do the avoda, uparku b'chol yom, and then he would undo the mishkan and take it down. Lo sharsa bo shechina. So for all 7 days that Moshe was doing this whole process, there was no shechina there. V'hayisrael nechlamim. They were embarrassed, they were disgraced. V'omrim l'moshe, Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe, kol ha-torah shatarachnu. We spent months working and toiling and building the mishkan. Why did we do that? Shetishra Shechina Beinenu, so that the Shechina could dwell amongst us. V'neida sheneschaper lanu avon ha'egel. And that would be an indicator for us, it will be an edus for us, that Hashem has forgiven us for the sin of the egel. And now they're distraught. They spent months trying to be able to see that Hashem is, we've done tshuva, we've improved ourselves, we're building the Mishkan now, and we're trying to show that, you know, Hashem should give us some type of sign that he's forgiven us, but we're missing it. He's not giving it to us. Lekach amar lehem zeha davar asher tziva Hashem tasu v'yera alechem kvod Hashem. Aaron achi kedai v'choshev mimeni. My brother Aaron is more important and worthwhile than I am. So through Aaron's karbanos and through Aaron's avoda, so that is how the Jews will know and that Hashem will actually come. His Shechina will dwell amongst Klal Yisrael. Similarly, in source number 6, which is a sitter for Rashi, so he writes in the, why it's called Chanukah Sabbath Beach, things like that, why we read that on Chanukah. Pam Shlishi Yorad Bas Asara Batishrei. The third time Moshe went up, it was on the 10th of Tishrei. Then it's Baser Salachti. Hashem told Moshe, Salachti, I've forgiven Bnei Israel. Sorry, he came down. Sorry, you're right. Yeah. That's what I meant. He came down on the 10th of Tishrei. Uvenis baser selachti b'yom haKippurim bo b'yom nemer lo va'asuli mikdash. The Moshe got the commandment of make for me a mishkan, make me a mikdash on Yom Kippur, right when he came down after the second luchos. V'yadu hakol shenitzratza lahem, and that was an indicator to Klal Yisrael that Hashem had forgiven them over the Chet HaEgel. And what was their reaction? Samchu b'malacha, they were so happy in their work because of what this would mean for them. That you know, imagine Bnei Yisrael, they thought they blew it. Hashem had taken them out. They had one big opportunity and they blew it with the Chet HaEgel. They were done. And now Hashem shows that there's a way of indicating that we have been forgiven for what we've done. So they were so joyous, they were filled with such joy. V'asau b'zrizus, they did it with alacrity. They were saying, let's go, let's build the Mishkan, because this is a sign for us that we've been forgiven. You know, there's like the whole story about the boy on the train who left the family, and he came back, and he wanted to come back. And he had asked the parents, I don't know if you're going to forgive me for everything I've done in the past. If you forgive me, like put like a white flag on the tree, right? Put a white flag on the tree, and I'll know that you want me back despite my transgressions. And if not, if I don't see the white flag when I'm coming off the train, so then I'm going to just pass by. And he gets back on the train, and he not only does he see a white flag, he sees the whole tree is covered in white. And that was a sign for him that his parents had forgiven him, and you know, and then he was able to come home. So similarly, that is what the Mishkan is for us. The Mishkan for the Klal Yisrael is an indicator that Hashem has been able to move on past the Chet HaEgel and says, it's time for you to come home. It's time for you to come home. I'm amongst you. I'm living with you. And it's okay. I've moved on. Or moved on enough that I could dwell my presence upon you. But there's an obvious problem for Rashi, which is Rashi addressed for us, number one, what is the purpose of the Mishkan? Namely, to show that Hashem has forgiven Bnei Yisrael over the Chet HaEgel. But the problem is, what about the location? If the Mishkan is supposed to serve as a sign that Hashem has forgiven the Jews, so why on earth are we getting the command of the Mishkan before, in the Torah, before the Chet HaEgel even appears? Right? It would make a lot of sense that if the Mishkan is just supposed to indicate to us that Hashem has forgiven us about the Chet HaEgel. So when should it appear in the Torah? Especially if it chronologically it happened afterwards, it's supposed to appear after the Chet HaEgel. So why on earth does it appear before the Chet HaEgel? So Rashi himself addresses the question. If we look, for some reason this didn't get a source, but on the top of page number 2, Shmos Lamed Aleph Pasuk Yudches, so the beginning of Sheni in Kisisa, actually my Bar Mitzvah Parsha, Vayitein HaMoshe, I would lay it for you, but I'll save you the trouble, Kechal Osola Daber Yito Bahar Sinai, Shnei Luchos Haidus, Luchos Evan, Ksuvim Be'etzva Lokim. So when Moshe finishes speaking with Bnei Hashem at Har Sinai, Hashem gives him the two Luchos, and then that are written with the finger of God, and then the Torah describes how he came down and through the luchos. So on that pasuk, Rashi notes, famously, in source number 7, Ein muktam uma'uchar b'Torah. There's no real order in the Torah. Really, Maisa ego kodem letzivoy melechath mishkan. That the incident that happened in Parshas Kisisa of Chet HaEgel really happened before the command of the Mishkan. Yamim Rabim Haya. It was a long time before. Shahare Bishivas Bratabas Nishtabru Haluchos. The first luchos were broken on the 17th of Tammuz. Uva Yom Kippurim Nitratza Kadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael. On Yom Kippur, that's months later, right? Hashem finally forgives Bnei Yisrael. Ulamachras, the next day, Hetchilu Bnei Didvas HaMishkan V'Hukam Be'echa Bnei Yisrael. You know, on the 11th of Tishrei, that's when they start donating to the Mishkan, and it's established on the 1st of Nisan. So what is Rashi's answer as to why the Chet, even though the Mishkan is an edus that the Jews have been forgiven over the Chet HaEgel, so why does it appear before the Chet HaEgel? Simple answer, Ein Muktam U'Me'ocher B'Torah. There's no order in the Torah. Sometimes things are out of order in the Torah. Rashi, in contrast to the Ramban, generally, is much more comfortable with an Ein Muktam U'Me'ocher B'Torah and not explaining why the difference occurs. Why is the Mishkan before?
Well, a lot of times, the Gemara says Hashem brings the
refuah. So hold that thought. Rashi doesn't say that.
I know, right?
Rashi doesn't say that. Right. So here, I don't think that, and I think there's a reason why Rashi didn't say it, but I'll get back to it in 2 minutes when I get to Rabbeinu Bachya. Because I think there's a subtle difference between Rashi and Rabbeinu Bachya, and I think that difference highlights exactly what you're saying. So, but according to Rashi, why is it that the Mishkan appears before the Chet HaEgel? It's because the Torah sometimes writes things out of order. And like, if we did a show of hands, I don't think any of us would be like, yes, Rashi, that was the best answer in the world. But Rashi sometimes is more comfortable than others, especially when they're Midrashei Chazal like, saying the same thing. That, you're right, it's out of order. Why? I don't know. And that's something which Rashi is more comforting. Obviously, for us, we'd wonder, we think that, again, I think I'm in general more on board with the Ramban here, that the Torah is intentional with the order that it says things. And even if it goes out of order, so then usually there is a reason why. But Rashi doesn't indicate, but that is approach number one. What is the purpose of the Mishkan? It shows that Hashem has forgiven us for the mistake of Chet HaEgel as evidenced by his Shechina dwelling amongst us. So why does it not appear before the Chet HaEgel? Because there's no order. The Torah writes things out of order. That's approach number one. Approach number two is Rabbeinu Bachya. So if you look at the beginning of this week's Parsha, source number 8, Perek of Hei, Psukim Aleph through Gimel, Vaydaber Hashem al Moshe Lemor, Daber al Bnei Yisrael, V'yichu li truma, me'ez kol ish asher yidvenu libo, techu es trumasi, take from each, a donation offering from each person who's generous enough to offer it, take truma. But then for our purposes, v'zos ha-truma, what is the donation that they're supposed to make? Asher tichu me'etam, zahav v'chasef u'nachoshes. A very innocuous pasuk, you know, wouldn't make much of it. Take gold, take silver, take copper. And if I had to ask all of you, what's the reason it says gold first? What would you...
It's the most expensive.
It's the nicest, it's the biggest ask. So that's why you say gold first. But Rabbeinu Bachya says, no. There's a reason why we are asking for gold first. So if you look at Rabbeinu Bachya, source number 9, you're thinking it right now. Perek Chafei Pasach Vav, and once he makes the point, you're like, oh, that's a good point. Masha Hisker Bakan Zav Berosha Truma. Why are we talking about gold here? First, Lirmos Shekvar Nimcha Lehem Avon HaEgel Shahaya Shal Zav. To indicate, to hint to them that they've been forgiven for the sin of this of the calf, which is of gold. What was the calf made of? Gold. So you know how we're going to show that we've been forgiven? Here, donate gold. And they're going to get the message that we messed up with gold. So therefore, that is why we're starting with gold. And now we're going to get to the way that Rabbeinu Bachya is different than Rashi. V'chein darshu razal, etc. And says, gives a similar example, but skip to the next line where it's the bold. That is why we are being commanded here with the donation of the Mishkan. What does he mean? Right? The mitzvah is really happened on the day after Yom Kippur, so why is the Mishkan being described here if the Chet HaEgel happened way earlier? Even though the sin happened before the Maisa HaMishkan, so what is the answer? Why is it, unlike Rashi? Rashi says, in Mokdum Ocher B'Torah, Rabbeinu Bachya gives a different answer. Mikom makom haTorah shekol derecheha darchei Noam v'chol nisivoseha shalom. We know about the Torah, famous pasuk. Its ways are pleasant ways, and its paths are paths of peace. And therefore, ratzta lahakdim inyan ma'isa hamishkan. And here's his line where he's different than Rashi. Shehu hakapara kodem sheyaskir haavon hahu. So we want to describe the ma'isa hamishkan, the construction of the mishkan, before we mention the sin. Why? Kikain midasol shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like Mr. Starr said just a minute ago. Shemaktim refua lamaka. We want to describe the medical treatment, the way we're going to the healing before the infliction. Because that the Torah's ways are peaceful, the Torah's ways are just, and therefore we want to first describe the refua before the machla. We won't say some of the historic jokes that have been mentioned over refuah and machla, that might be quite sexist. But either way, how is Rabbeinu Bachya different? Rabbeinu Bachya is saying the Mishkan wasn't an indicator that the Shekhinah was dwelling amongst Klal Yisrael. The Mishkan served, and the construction of the Mishkan served as a kapara. By building the Mishkan, that is how the Jews were forgiven. The way the Jews were able to get over the fact that they did the Chet HaEgel was through the construction of the Mishkan. He says, "Shakapara kodem sheyaskar avonahu." We should mention the atonement, the way they were able to fix it before the avon. And that is how he is explaining why the Mishkan is mentioned before the Chet HaEgel. Even though chronologically, it's totally backwards, because we know historically, first the Chet HaEgel happened, and only then the Mishkan. So why are we mentioning the Mishkan first? Because that is the way that Hashem works, that is the way the Torah works, the Chol Darachah, Darachi Noam, the Chol Nisivoseh HaShalom, Chemaktim Refua Lamaka, we're going to put the remedy before the affliction, and therefore we are going to mention how Bnei Yisrael are going to get Kapara, the building of the Mishkan, before we even mention that they sinned. That is Rabbeinu Bachya.
What does he do with the pasuk Va'asuli Mikdash?
Va'asuli Mikdash, you make me a Mishkash, V'shachanti B'socham, because you did Kapara. You're going to be doing
Kapara. He still agrees that Hashem is dwelling on them.
Correct. He's agreeing that Hashem is dwelling on them, but he's explaining the way that they got there and the way that Hashem was going to put his presence amongst them was through the vehicle of attaining kapara via building the Mishkan. That is what Rabbeinu Bachya is saying. So unlike Rashi, who thought that the Mishkan was an indicator that Hashem was amongst them, and therefore the Jews had been forgiven, the Mishkan for the Rabbeinu Bachya served as the process, served as the vehicle which the Jews attained their atonement. So there's a couple of questions which were left with Rabbeinu Bachya, which we don't necessarily have the answer. And again, this is what he's trying to then, using that also to explain why we mention gold first, which is clearly for him an indicator, a reference to the Chet HaEgel. But there's three questions that we have left in Rabbeinu Bachya, which we're not necessarily going to answer right now. It's a little bit of a discussion amongst later commentators as what is he referring to? Did the actual command for the Mishkan happen now? Or did the Torah choose to write it now because they wanted to mention the Refuah before the Machla? Namely, the Torah puts the Mishkan before the Chet HaEgel. So does that mean that Hashem actually commanded Moshe about the Mishkan before the Chet HaMe'egel ever happened? We're going to see some people think that. Or is he saying that no, even though Hashem commanded Moshe after the Chet HaEgel already happened, the Torah chose to put it, the command beforehand to serve as a refuah before a makkah. If you got that, great. If not, all great. But it's a little bit unclear from Meir Bach, yeah? So that's question number one. Question number two is, who here likes his answer? Like, do you think that the refuah before the machla is a reason for the Torah to put something before the other one? It's like a nice idea that we hear in Chazal, that sometimes Hashem will give the Jews the source of redemption before they are even in trouble, as a sign of like Hashem being with them. So is that an example why we're going to change around the parshiyus of the Torah? That's not the normal way that refuah before the makkah is understood, right? Normally you say refuah before the makkah, Hashem will give them something, the Jews something they needed, and the way that they're going to redeem themselves before they were even in trouble. Is that justified, changing the Torah out of order to just be able to make a point? Or Hashem changing a command to Moshe just to make that point? So that seems a little difficult for Rabbeinu Bachya. And also he's a little bit unclear. Again, I'm asking questions just for food for thought, even though I'm not necessarily going to answer them right now. I don't usually do that, but I hope it's okay. Is what about the Mishkan was Mechaper? Right? Why was it Mechaper? Was it the giving of gold and, you know, the Jews used the gold for bad purposes and now it's using for good purposes? Is it the months of work that they put in? So you want to try and figure out what exactly about the Chet HaEgel, and if we understand what the Chet HaEgel is, which maybe we'll discuss in a couple weeks, so then we can maybe understand more how the Jews achieved atonement specifically through the Mishkan. I know I just threw a bunch of you, but mainly Rabbeinu Bachya's Shita is, to sum it up, that the Jews were atoned through the Chet HaEgel, through the Mishkan, and therefore it's mentioned before the Chet HaEgel because of Hashem putting the refuah before the Makkah. So far we have Rashi, who says that it is about an indicator that Hashem had forgiven them, versus Rabbeinu Bachya, who says this is the reason why Hashem forgave them and gave them kapara. Next we have the opinion of the Sforno. So the Sforno, I actually just learned about this part of the Sforno preparing the Shir, has at the end of his commentary a Maimer Kavanas HaTorah, where he explains like a lot of interesting things and what the Torah's and Hashem's intent were with certain mitzvos and certain descriptions. So there is where he has his most thorough description of the topic. So we'll start in source number 10, but he has this idea in several different places, and it's pretty similar, but different than Rashi and Rabbeinu Bachya. V'chein roi lisbonim, ki amnam kodim l'cheta egel, tekef achar matan Torah. So imagine the scene. The Jews just said nasa v'nishma, they accepted the Torah, they hear the commands, and we've never been on a higher level before the cheta egel. So lo hayu Yisrael srichem l'chol eila, laman hishro shchinasa b'neim. Besochem. After Matan Torah, the Jews needed no intermediary, they needed no tricks, no nothing, to be able to have a relationship and have Hashkin with Hashem and have Hashkina dwell amongst them. And therefore, v'lo nitzdavu al asiyas ha-mishkan v'kelav v'kohanav u'misharsav v'lo al-shem karban l'chov ha-sibur o'yachad klal. In a pre-Chet HaEgel world, the Jews did not need a mishkan. They did not need kelim of the Mishkan. They didn't need the vessels of the Mishkan. They did not need Kohanim serving. And they weren't obligated to offer any karbon. That was all things that existed after the Chet HaEgel. Before the Chet HaEgel, in order for Hashem's Shechina to dwell amongst them, needed none of that. Needed absolutely nothing. Zulasi achar maisa ego. They only needed these things after the action of the ego. Ka'amram Yusbarach. Hashem told them after Har Sinai, they don't need any of those things. You want Hashem's Shechina amongst you? You need absolutely nothing. You don't need a carbon. You don't need Kohanim. You don't need Kalim. V'lo hischaivo. They don't need anything. They don't need a mishkan. They don't need kelim, etc. She'in yisnadvu olos v'shlamim yaspik mizbach adama. Okay, if you want to offer voluntary offerings like olos and shlamim, so then you'll build a mizbeach as the description at the end of Parshas Yisro. The Amar b'chol makom asher askir eshemi. So let's just take a break in this forum. We'll pause here right second. Just let's look at the pasuk in source number 11 that he's quoting, which is at the end of Parshas Yisro. Mizbach adama tasali. You should build a earthen altar for me. V'zavachta alav es olasecha ve'eshlamecha. You should offer olos and shlamim, which are both voluntary offerings, as soncha vesbekarecha, sheep and cattle, bechol hamakom asher askir eshemi, any place where I cause my name to be proclaimed, avo elecha uverachticha, I will come and bless you. So what is that pasuk referring to? Right, it's referring to this mizbach adama, which we assume that there's two mizbeachs in the mikdash. One is made of nechoshes, which is copper, and the other one is made out of gold. So what is this mizbeach adamah? So the mainstream view in Chazal is that this is really the mizbeach hanechoshes, and there was some type of earth in it, etc. And they're really talking about the same mizbeach. And you have to figure out what the end of the pasuk is saying. But for the Sforno, this pasuk is the key. This pasuk describes the reality before the Chet HaEgel, where we could offer karbanos when we want, and notice it's only voluntary offerings, because we don't have to offer any obligatory offerings. And this end, b'chol hamakom asher askir eshemi, avo elecho v'rachticha. Every place where I cause my name to be proclaimed, I will come and bless you. So what he says, and now we're going back up to the Sforno, after he quotes the pasuk, second line on the top of page 3, v'hu kol makum sheyikra be'emes beis Elohim ke'inyan batei midrashos, any place which is in truth called the beis Elohim, like the batei midrashos, v'zulasam avo elecha uve'rachticha. Anytime you have a place that is dedicated to Hashem, you don't have one centralized place, the Mishkan, and that is the only place that Hashem's Shekhinah is going to dwell before the Chet HaEgel. You build a base medrash on Devan, you build a base medrash on Tui, you build a base medrash on church. Whatever it is, I will be there. I will be there. That is a pre-Mikdash reality, that anywhere that is dedicated towards Hashem, Hashem's Shekhinah will dwell. You don't need Karbanos, you don't need a centralized Mikdash, you don't need Kohanim, you don't need Kalim. The kol ela bar takef akar machan Torah. And then this is all after the high level of matan Torah, etc. And then he goes through the whole thing. And then he finally at the end, skip to the next bold, achar chetam be'egel, after they sinned with the egel, gam kip tfilas Moshe bechiro netar lasis chatam, so they sinned. And Hashem didn't want his Shekhinah to dwell amongst Klal Yisrael at all. But Moshe davened for the Jews, and to be able to bear some sin and to have some involvement with the Jews. Im koze amar va'asu li mikdash. But it was not going to be in the same fashion and manner that it was before. V'lo be'ofen acher, ki lo hishiva klal em madregas ma'alosim shahayu b'kodem. They were not going to be able to attain that level that they were on before. So what is the Sforno saying? The Sforno saying is that before the Chet HaEgel, the Jews were on a religious high. Right after Matan Torah, they needed no intermediary to be able to have Hashem Shekhinah dwell amongst them. You want to build a base medrash? Build a base medrash. Hashem's there. You feel His presence. And they didn't need no Kohanim. They didn't need no Karbanos that were obligatory. They could offer voluntary Karbanos with the Bechoros.
I'm out of a job.
You're out of a job. And it was great. Hashem is everywhere. You know, Uncle Moshe sung, Hashem is here, Hashem is there, Hashem is truly everywhere. Up, up, down, down, right, left, and all around. There was literally all around, right? All around Hashem is going to be. And the Mishkan was, in fact, a punishment. The Mishkan was a punishment for the Chet HaEgel. Why is it a punishment for the Chet HaEgel? Because the Jews messed up, so you're not going to live in an ideal circumstance anymore where you're able to attain Hashem's Shekhinah in any way, shape, or form that you want. Rather, there's going to be a specific set of rules. You're going to have to bring karbanos. You're going to have kohanim. It can't be you. You're going to have to do it in a structure, a centralized structure. It won't be democratic anymore. Now you're going to go to the Mishkan to be able to offer karbanos, and you're not even going to be able to offer the karbanos. The Bechorim are no longer going to offer the karbanos. It's going to be the Kohanim. And that is the shift that the Sforno describes. It goes before the Chet HaEgel, you're able to serve Hashem wherever you want, and now it's limited towards the Mishkan if you want Hashem Shechina to be there.
Until the Mishkan and Shiloh, and then for a period of time after that, weren't they permitted to be?
So what about, how does the Sforno understand Bamas? So I think what he will tell you is that it's definitely a good question. I didn't think about that. The Bama, this one is describing a time when there is a centralized location, right? And there's certain things that you're not able to offer on a Bama that you could offer in the Mishkan. And even if you offer something on a Bama, that doesn't necessarily mean that wherever, you know, you offer a Bama in your backyard so that Hashem Shechina is going to dwell there. You could offer a carbon. That's nice. So you have the ability to offer karbanos. That doesn't necessarily mean that Hashem is going to dwell his presence, have his presence dwell amongst you. So I think that's what this foreigner would say, is like, you're more than welcome to build a Bama, and there might even be a purpose to it, but that's not going to result in Hashem Shechina. It might be able, you'll get your offering in, that whatever you're offering, you are able to put on a Bama. It's limited also. But I think that is the way that the Sforno will answer. So if you look at source number 12, which is the Sforno in our Parsha, V'chein tasu, osam kedesha eskon besochem. You have to build the Mishkan so that I dwell amongst you. What is the purpose of that? L'daber imcha, I'm going to speak to you from there. L'kabel tfilos v'avodis Yisrael. And to accept the tfilos and the worship of Yisrael. Lo kemosha ha'inyan kodem ha'egel. Not like it was before the egel. Now you want your tfilos answered, you want your sacrifice answered. So that is going to be restricted and limited to the Mishkan. So the Sforno is consistent. Again, he has a few pieces. We're not going to read all of them inside. But the Sforno is consistent that before the Mikdash, before the Chet HaEgel, the Jews were on a high level and didn't need a Mishkan. And only afterwards, as a punishment, they were going to be limited to the Mishkan. So what's his proof? We still have problems for the Sforno. What's the problem for the Sforno? The same problem we had for Rashi and Rabbeinu Bachya. What if the Mishkan is in a post-Chet HaEgel world? It is a response to the Chet HaEgel. So why does the Chet HaEgel appear after the Mishkan? If the Mishkan was a only reality after the Chet HaEgel and wasn't the plan, really, were you going to be able to build a base medrash and a shtibel in your backyard and a tent? So why on earth do you need to put, does Hashem put the story of the Mishkan before the Chet HaEgel, if it's just a response to the Chet HaEgel? So the Sforno says, is also aware of this question. And if you look in source number 13, he doesn't really address it, but he's just trying to show you that it must be that this really happened after Maisa HaEgel. So if you look at the end of source number 13, starting at three lines from the bottom, Ava'ata yistarech l'kohanim. In a post-Egel world, we need kohanim. When was Shevet Levi chosen to be Shevet Levi and to offer karbanos? Right, we famously know that the Bechoros, the firstborns sinned at Chet HaEgel, they lost that right to serve, and they were offering karbanos beforehand, and only after the Chet HaEgel, where Mi Hashem Eli, that Moshe Rabbeinu said, and Shevet Levi is the ones who didn't sin and stepped up and even killed people, even their family members. That is when Shevet Levi was chosen. So if Shevet Levi was only chosen after the Chet HaEgel, Kamo Shehid Ba'atman the Torah, so then how could it be that Aaron and his sons are chosen before the Chet HaEgel to be able to offer karbanos in the Mishkan? It doesn't make any sense. So the Sforno says, from the fact that Shevet Levi is the one who's offering karbanos in the Mikdash, that must serve as a proof that really the Torah is out of order. That really what happened was the Chet HaEgel. Levi was chosen. That's how Aaron and his sons are chosen. And therefore, that's an indicator that the Torah is just written out of order. So we have two responses that we want to say on the Sforno. Number one is, okay, so it's nice that you proved that this happened after the Chet HaEgel, the Mishkan, from the fact that the Levim were the ones who were chosen to serve in the Mishkan. But that doesn't answer our question. Why did the Torah switch the order? The same question we asked on Rashi, the same question we asked on Rabbeinu Bachya, the same question which we asked on the Sforno. And number two, how would we answer the question of the Sforno? So we're not going to get into this right now, but it is a whole discussion and literature is when were the Levium and the Kohanim chosen? I just said that it was, you know, they were chosen after Chet Egel, and there are definitely views, especially Rashi, probably so, who assume that Levi was chosen at the Chet Egel. But there are those and others, including the Ramban, who think that maybe the Kohanim, even if the Levim were chosen afterwards, maybe the Kohanim were chosen beforehand. And that might be how the Ramban answers this foreigner's question. Namely, we have an indicator that that it happened after, that the Mishkan happened after Chet Egel, because otherwise, how are the Kohanim chosen? But the Ramban might tell you the Kohanim were really chosen before the Chet Egel, even if the rest of the Levim were chosen after the Chet Egel. Just one more point in the Sforno before we move on, is that for the Sforno, we're not going to read it inside right now, but for the Sforno, there's other ramifications of this idea. He thinks that we were on such like a lofty level before Chet Egel, and afterwards there was like a concession almost that Hashem forgave us, but it came at a cost. But there are other things that we wouldn't have had, it sounds like from the Sforno in source number 14, if it weren't for the Chet Egel, besides for the Mishkan. But another thing that we might not have had, he says kashrus. We might not have needed kashrus. Imagine a Jewish world without kosher. You know, it'd definitely be a lot less expensive. But kashrus wouldn't have existed. Other things related to childbirth, like nida, tumas ayoledes, etc., wouldn't have been necessary. And all those things were meant to compensate for the lower level that we were on after the Chet HaEgel. Again, that's toward the end of source 14. We're not going to read it inside for now. But so far, we've seen three approaches. What is the purpose of the Mishkan? Let's just sum up for right now. Number one is Rashi, that it's an indicator that Hashem's Shechina is amongst us and forgave us over the Chet HaEgel. Number two is Rabbeinu Bachya, that it itself was a kapara for the Chet HaEgel. And number three is the Sforno, who says that it was basically a punishment and a negative consequence of the Chet HaEgel. All three answers are assuming that the Mishkan has some relationship to the Chet HaEgel. And then we're left wondering, why then is it before the Chet HaEgel? And you're left with Ein Buktim Mocher B'Torah, the Refuah before the Machla, etc. The Ramban, however, and this is what we're going to talk about the rest of the time, and I think it's the one who makes the most sense, is totally rejects any connection to the Chet HaEgel, and he totally explains the chronology. The Ramban basically says, when did the command to the Mishkan happen? It happened right after the Jews accepted the Torah and got some of the mitzvos. So the Torah is perfectly in order. So we're going to read the Ramban, and there's so much to unpack in this Ramban, which is why I would try moving a little faster through this Sforno, even though we have time, because there's really so much to say. So let's read the Ramban. Source number 15, it's one of the more famous Rambans al Torah, but hopefully we'll be able to add some chidushim. So Kasher Dibar Hashem im Yisrael Panim Panim Ba'aseres HaDibros. When the Jews spoke face to face to Hashem and got the Seres HaDibros, V'sivol Sam Ayudei Moshe Ksas Mitzvos Shehem Kamo Avos L'Mitzvos Seres HaTorah, and they got other mitzvos, which were like the categories and forefathers of other mitzvos of the Torah. Kasher Hinhigu Rabboseinu Magirim Shabam L'Siayid, just like a ger will start off with certain fundamental mitzvos, which are, you know, the leaders of concepts of other mitzvos. V'Yisrael Kibu Aleihem Lasos Komashi Yitzavim Al Yado Shamoshe. What did the Jews do? The Jews said, yes, we will accept the Torah and we will do whatever we were supposed to do. Vikaras imahim bris al kolze. And they made a covenant about this. So far, the Jews are commanded in mitzvos. The Jews say yes and make a covenant. Me'ata, based on this, hine heim lo la'am. By saying we are going to do the mitzvos, they become Hashem's people. V'hu lahem lelokim, and he becomes their God. Kasher hitna himayim mitchila, like Hashem made the condition beforehand with them. V'ata im shamoa tishmu'u b'koli, if you listen to my voice. V'shmartim esprisi, and guard my covenant. V'yisem li sigula, you'll be chosen among for me. V'amar v'atem tiyuli mamleches kohanim v'goy kadosh. So basically, if you keep the mitzvos, you will be my people and you will be sanctified. And as a result, the Jews, what they were coming off Mishpatim, which just described at the end, the Jews accepting the Torah. So right after that, they became worthy. V'nehem kedoshim ru'uyim sheyeha yeh behem mikdash l'hashrosh shechinaso b'neihem. they became so sanctified and holy that they became worthy of having a mikdash, a sanctuary, where Hashem will dwell in their presence amongst them. So what is the purpose of the Mishkan for the Ramban? It is a place for Hashem to have his presence and honor dwell amongst Klal Yisrael. Why does it appear here? It appears here because this is right after the Jews accepted the Torah. And therefore, what made them worthy of Hashem's Shekhinah dwelling amongst them? It was the Jews accepting the Torah, the Jews accepting the mitzvot and becoming his people. V'lachin. Siva tchila advar hamishkan sheyelo bayis besocham mekudosh lishmo v'sham yidaber im moshav yitzaves bnei Yisrael. So that is why we're going to have the Mishkan be the first thing we talk about after that, and that you should have a house amongst you which is dedicated to his name, and that is where he will speak with Moshe, and that is where the commands through Bnei Yisrael will be issued. Based on this, that the purpose of the Mishkan is to have Hashem's Shekhinah dwell amongst us, what is the most important object in the Mishkan? It is going to be the place where the Shekhinah dwells, which is the Aron Kodesh, because that is where the Hashem is going to speak from. So that is where Hashem's Shekhinah emanates from. So that is going to be the most important and central object in the Mishkan is going to be the Aron. Kamosha Amar v'noati l'cha sham v'dibarti ilcha me'al ha-kaporas al-kein hektim ha-aron v'ha-kaporas bekan ki hu muktam b'mayla. So why do we first are going to mention the Aron and the Kaporas, even though if you're building, no one here is in construction, right? So if you're in construction, we got to go to Tababi Matanki or something and say, what would you build first? Would you build the most important thing in your building that's going to be like the crown jewel, the chandelier, or are you going to build the structure? So obviously he's going to tell us, what do you build first? The structure, right? You build the structure first. So why is Hashem giving the command first about the Aron and then the Kaporas and then the Shulchan? He should have told us about the all the panels and all the courtyard and how big it's going to be. And that's actually the way that the Torah describes it in Vayakol and Bekudei, because that's the way they built it, based on Bezalel's suggestion to Moshe Rabbeinu. But the Torah goes out of its way here to first tell you about build an Aron and build the Kaporas, because those are the central components of the Mishkan. Why are those the central components of the Mishkan? Because the whole purpose of the Mishkan, according to the Ramban, is for Hashem's Shekhinah to dwell amongst Bnei Yisrael in the middle of them. And the way he does that, and the where he speaks from, is from the Aron. And that makes it the central focus, that makes it the object that is going to be the most important. And that is why the Torah describes with building the Aron first. So, let's skip down to the beginning of the next... Right, so he's talking about there might be wood, but the Zav, yeah, right. So, skipping down to the next paragraph, and here is a theme in the Ramban, which I think oftentimes gets lost. Everyone's so excited. What's the purpose of the Mishkan according to the Ramban? It is that Hashem's Shekhinah should dwell, and the Aron's most important, and those are very important ideas, which hopefully we developed a little bit. But the Ramban goes further. V'sod ha-Mishkan hu. You want to know the secret of the Mishkan? She ha-kavod asher shachan al-har Sinai shochin alav benistar. The kavod, Hashem's glory that and honor that dwelled on Har Sinai. Imagine the scene at Har Sinai. Probably the most important event in all of history, yet alone Jewish history, right, was the Hashem revealing himself to the people at Har Sinai and giving the Torah. And there was a realization and a clear indicator in a way that has never been such experience of mass revelation, and everyone was able to, be able to perceive Hashem or hear him, whatever that means. So how do you take something like that with you? How do you take an experience like Har Sinai and just say goodbye? You just move on and you try and remember it. So we do have, the Ramban thinks that there's a losase to forget about Maimon Har Sinai. We actually have an obligation to remember Har Sinai. He talks about it in the Ramban Ala Torah. He mentions it in Sefer HaMitzvos, and where he adds in Mitzvos where the Rambam, where he disagrees with the Rambam. But the Ramban thinks you can't forget about Har Sinai. But the way to take Har Sinai with you is the Mishkan. It's whatever magic, whatever lightning was there at Har Sinai, take it in a bottle, put it with you, pack it up, and we're going to put it in the Mishkan. that the Mishkan is going to be able to say, we're going to take that experience of encountering Hashem's Shechina, and let us take it with us through the Mishkan. And we're not going to go, for the sake of time, we're not going to go through all of them right now, but the Ramban and a lot of the pieces that I put here, you could look through them, through sources 15 through 18, has a lot of parallels between Har Sinai and the Mishkan. That Hashem's kavod was on both, and Hashem's voice was heard from each. You both of them had you have an isser of getting too close with the punishment of death. You're going to have boundaries set up in exactly the same type of format set around both Har Sinai and the Mishkan. Hashem calls Moshe to approach in both cases, and the parallels go on and on for the Ramban between the Mishkan and Har Sinai. And for the Ramban, the explanation of that is that Har Sinai, Hashem's Shechina was present, and that is what the Mishkan was trying to accomplish.
When did the eagle happen?
So the eagle happened the same time, but the commandment for the Mishkan was commanded beforehand. Because it has nothing to do with...
But Moshe didn't come down until Yom Kippur.
So he got the command beforehand.
So before he went up,
at some point when he's in Shemayim, he got the command.
When did he give it to us?
What? When did he give to the Ramban's not saying anything about that, but Moshe got the command about the Mishkan.
Is it in the middle of Kisisa then?
Why is there
a break?
Okay, so now you're going to have to get back, which is a question. I don't think I'm doing Vayakol Pekude, so I'll have to ask Rabbi Gold. I think I'm doing Kisisa, but maybe I'll ask Rabbi Gold to speak about this. Why is it that the Mishkan is repetitive? Why do we need to have the command and then the action, right?
What I'm saying is,
right, and the middle, and it's even weirder because besides for being repeated, there's a chet eagle in between. So that the Ramban later has a whole mahalach about, and how it might indicate other things, which are definitely relevant to our conversation. But for our purposes, the command the Ramban is saying, the command for the Mishkan, it's irrespective of chet eagle. It has nothing to do with a kapara. It has nothing to do with it being a concession. Rather, what is this about? It is about Hashem Shechina dwelling amongst us. And we became fit for that. We became worthy of that when we accepted the mitzvos and became Hashem's people.
So it would be right to say, according to verse 3, answers, we would not have had a Mishkan if there was no chait.
That's what it sounds like. Because think about it. What was the Jews' plan? What was Hashem's plan to go through the Midbar?
Go straight to
Eretz Yisrael. So why did they need to spend from Tishrei to Nisan on a construction project? It would have been shorter just to go straight and be able to go straight. So according to the Ramban, you have to figure out why that is, but that's and why that's important, and why according to them you're going to say that. But for them, it wasn't really the plan. But the Ramban is saying, why does this parsha appear here? It makes a lot of sense, because it is a response to the Jews becoming Hashem's people by accepting the commandments and making a covenant. And what are the Mishkan trying to accomplish? It is Hashem's presence dwelling amongst us. And that is the secret of the Mishkan, is really it's a parallel to Har Sinai, that just the same way Hashem's presence was dwelling on Har Sinai, so too it's dwelling in the Mishkan. And that's why we're going to have all these parallels between the Mishkan and Har Sinai. And the Ramban uses this to explain many things. We're going to skip source 16 for now, but it's the end of Parshas of Sefer Shmos. And that's describing how Hashem's presence also dwelled. This a very similar idea, and the parallels between Sinai and the Mishkan. But I want to get to two more Rambans, and with this I will close. The Ramban is Hakdama to Shmos, and the Ramban in his Hakdama to Vayikra. So as we know, the Ramban likes his Hakdamas, number one. He's very into his Hakdamas. And also the Ramban, unlike Rashi, more so than a lot of other commentators, cares about structure. Why are things in this order? Why are things after this? We just saw the Ramban doesn't want to say that the Mishkan, the order, the commandment of the Mishkan was out of place. It's in the perfect place. So similarly, the Ramban in his discussion to Shmos and Vayikra is like, what is the meaning of the Mishkan? Why do we have so many parshios about the Mishkan? And why are they in Sefer Shmos? And why does Sefer Shmos seem to end on a cliffhanger in the middle of the Miluim? Why just Hashem Shechina dwells, and then the Torah just ends, and then starts with the parshas about the Karbanos. So in all these questions, we're going to start with source number 17. So the Ramban, in his introduction to Shmos, says that the Torah calls Sefer Shmos, Sefer HaGolos V'HaGeula. It's the book of exile and redemption. And the obvious question is, when did the Jewish exile end? That's described in Sefer Shmos. We have Shmos, Va'era, Bo, Bishalach, so then the Jews leave Mitzrayim, right? So when did the Jews get redeemed? In Parshas Beshalach. And even if you're going to tell me, okay, like, then I'm going to become your nation at Har Sinai, so end in Parshas Yisrael, maybe in Mishpatim. What on earth are we describing the Geula process in Parshas Truma through Bekudei? So the Ramban relates to that question, and he says, it's the end of the second line in source number 17. V'nei hagalus einu nishlam ad yom shuvam el mekomam vel milas avosam yashuvu. He gives an incredible definition of what does it mean to be redeemed from exile. When you go into exile, as long as you are still feeling the repercussions of that exile, and you're not on the level spiritually of your forefathers, you are still in Golus. So the Jews go down to Mitzrayim. Even though they physically left Mitzrayim, they are still in Golus because they are not on the lofty level that their forefathers were before they came down to Mitzrayim. Ukishayatim Mitzrayim, afal pisha yatum ibeis avadim, even though they were no longer slaves, adayin yachshvu golim. They were still considered in exile. Ki hayu ba'aretz lo lahem nevuchim b'mitbar, but ukshabo el Har Sinai, when they came to Har Sinai, not just coming to Har Sinai, v'asu hamishkan, and they made the mishkan, v'shav hakadosh baruch hu, Hashem's presence comes back, v'hisha shchinaso b'neihem, and His presence dwells amongst them, ashavu el mailos avosam. That, and only then did they return to the level of their forefathers, and then he throws in a little bit of Kabbalah, shayotsod alaka, alay alayhem, v'heim heim hamarkava, the avos' faces are on the markava, v'az nechshvu ge'ulim. Only when they got Har Sinai, when they got the Torah, and then continued through the presence of Hashem's presence at the Mishkan, only then they reached the level of their forefathers, and that is when they were considered redeemed. V'lakein nishlam ha-sefer hazeh. Why are we ending the Torah in the middle of a cliffhanger? And this end of Sefer Shmos, bishlimo inyan ha-mishkan. Uviyos kavar Hashem maleo so samir. When Hashem's Shechina comes into the Mishkan, end of Sefer Shmos. Because that is when the Jews have reached the level of the Avos. That is when the Jews no longer feel the repercussions of being in Mitzrayim. When Hashem's Shechina chooses to dwell amongst the Mishkan. And that is why we have Parshas Truma through Pekudei at the end of Shmos. Even the whole Shmos is about Sefer HaGalos VeHagula. Part of Geula was making sure Hashem's Shechina dwells amongst us, not just at Har Sinai, but also through the Mishkan. And similarly, the Ramban in Vayikra describes a similar phenomenon. Why is Vayikra following Sefer Shmos? HaSefer HaZeh, in source number 18, Hu Toras Kohanim V'Halim, Yivar Bo Inyanei HaKarbanos Kulon U'Mishmeres HaMishkan. It is the perfect follow-up to the Mishkan, where we're going to describe two things. One is the Karbanos, and how we guard the Mishkan. Why is guarding the Mishkan important, and why are Karbanos important? Ki kasher haya sefer echad b'inyan hagalos v'geula mimenu. We just had the Sefer Shmos, where we spoke about the exile and the redemption. V'heshlimo b'inyan oel moed v'kavar Hashem asher milei es ha-mishkan. And we're going to end Sefer Shmos with how B'nai Yisrael were able to be successful and have and achieve that the Jews are going, Hashem's going to dwell His presence amongst them via the Mishkan. Sivahu b'karbanos uv'shmiras ha-mishkan. That we get the commands of guarding the Mishkan and offering sacrifices. Why? Sheyu hakabarnos kapara lahen. The sacrifices will help be atonements for them. Velo yigrimu havonos lasalik hashchina. Because if we don't have karbanos, what's going to happen? We're going to sin. And when we sin, even though Hashem has dwelled His presence amongst us at the end of Sefer Shmos, so we're going to sin and the Shechina is going to leave. So what do we have? A direct follow-up, let us have karbanos to serve as an atonement to ensure that even though we sin, Hashem will not cause the Shechina to leave. And similarly, we're going to have v'tziva b'kohanim hanigashim el Hashem say yishkachu shehuzer al tumas mikdash v'kadashav. We have to be so careful about tumah in the mikdash. We have all these laws about the item that becomes tummy, the kohanim that become tummy, and the reason for all of that is because what is at stake? What is at stake for the Ramban is Hashem's Shechina dwelling amongst us, and that's exactly describing why Sefer Vayikra follows Sefer Shmos. Because Sefer Vayikra is all about keeping what we got in Shmos and making sure that Hashem does not remove His presence amongst us. So just to summarize what we saw four approaches to what the purpose of the Mishkan. Number one, we saw Rashi, that Rashi thinks that it's a testimony that Hashem has forgiven us for the Chet HaEgel, and by showing us that His Shechina is amongst us, He's shown us that He's forgiven us. We saw Rabbeinu Bachya, who described how the Mishkan itself was a kapara for what the Chet HaEgel. We saw the Sforna, who says that the Mishkan was basically a punishment, that before the Chet HaEgel, we were on such a high level that we didn't need a Mishkan, we didn't need Kohanim, we didn't need Kalim. And after the Chet HaEgel, we sinned, and we can no longer reach that higher level, and therefore we're going to have a Mishkan, we're going to have Kashrus, we're going to have Nida, we're going to have all these things to be able to elevate us, because we've reached now a lower level. And finally, we have the Ramban. And for the Ramban, the Mishkan is the perfect follow-up to what we just described in Yisrael Mishpatim. And that is why it is placed there. It is because the Bnei Yisrael accept the Torah. They become a Melechas Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh. And through that, Hashem decides, now is my time to dwell amongst them. And now is my time that the Shekhinah is going to be amongst them. And that is why the Torah is going to describe the Mishkan at the end of Sefer HaGolos V'Geula, because part of Geula is getting back to that higher level that we were on, the level of the Avos. And Sefer Vayikra is all about maintaining Hashem's Shekhinah amongst us.